Sorry you feel that way. You ran up against one cheap crook, a murderer. That's not all, brother. Mackenzie got into the car, closed the door, rolled down the window, started the engine. I've had my experience with the American film industry. My first and my last. He drove off. In the front hall, Edith Howell said, I'm so sorry, Fletcher. Jeff told us all about the police dragging Moxie away. Not that I blame her for doing in that Steve Peterman. Awful man. I always said so, didn't I, John? John Mead had carried luggage down the stairs. Stella and Jerry Littleford were coming down the stairs with luggage, as was Cy Collar. Everyone was carrying luggage except Edith Howell. We were just hoping she'd have a little more time before she was incarcerated. She's been working so hard. In the street, a rubberneck wagon was going by. Arrested this afternoon, the actress Moxie Mooney for first-degree murder. Another tale of Key West. Fletch decided not to trouble anyone with the facts. Let these people go. Getting Frederick Mooney out of the house and to the airport would be much easier without his being encircled by the shock and clucking of these people. Where's Freddy? Edith asked. Getting as drunk as he can as fast as he can, I expect. Maybe. Oh, I know my Freddy, said Edith. I wouldn't have that man for all his millions. Scrambled eggs for brains. You'd get employed faster, Edith, as Mrs. Frederick Mooney, Cy Collar said. All the people carrying luggage were trying to get around the person not carrying luggage. Edith Howell centered herself nicely in the front hall. I don't think Freddy's the great actor people make him out to be either, said Edith. In time, gentlemen, time, he jumped on my every line. Most annoying. Of course, I knew how much he wanted to get back to his dressing room for a drink. Fletch watched them go through the process of leaving. It was as if they were leaving a hotel. Edith Howell jabbered to John Mead about getting to Miami over those bridges before dark. The Littlefords said they had to go back to Vanderbilt Beach where they had left luggage. Cy Collar was grumbling that he supposed he had to go back to Bonita Beach to oversee the shutting down of the Midsummer Night's Madness location. And if I don't at least go through the motions, Cy said, I suppose I'll never get employed again. Stella Littleford carried her bandaged head stiffly and said nothing. Only John Mead shook hands and said goodbye and said thank you. Before getting into the car, Jerry Littleford said, Oh yeah, Fletch. Someone called, with an English accent. Didn't catch the name. Talked fast. I didn't know where you were. He said to tell you Scarlet something or other, Pumpernickel? Won a $25,000 purse. No fooling. Didn't know you were into horse racing. Didn't know Scarlet Pimpernickel was either. If he were a doorman, they might have tipped him. As it was, they all drove off in two cars, discouraged for the moment, Fletch believed, but only for the moment. Nevertheless sure that on some tomorrow the right material and the right people would come together and they would create an unreality more credible than reality and be paid and be applauded. Chapter 39. This time, after knocking on Frederick Mooney's bedroom door, Fletch waited to be invited in. There was no response. He knocked again. He opened the door. Frederick Mooney was on his back on the bed. On the bedside table were a drinking glass and one of the bottles, three quarters full. Fletch closed the door and went to the bedside. Mr. Mooney? He shook the man's arm. Oh, come on, I don't need a final act. He sniffed the bottle on the bedside table. Cognac. Come on, said Fletch. I'm sure you can also hold your breath and play dead longer than anyone else who's ever been on the stage. On the bed on the other side of Mooney was an empty tablet bottle. The cap was off. Fletch reached over Mooney and picked up the bottle. The label was for prescription sleeping tablets. Mr. Mooney, Fletch said, you set the stage nicely. Now let's go. He shook him again. Geez, Fletch said. Do I believe it? He felt for the pulse in Mooney's wrist. There was none. Frederick Mooney was not breathing at all. Oh, well. Fletch dropped Mooney's hand. God damn it, now you're not acting at all. A curtain of wetness slipped down over Fletch's eyes. The afternoon light from the windows was bright. On the desk were two envelopes and an open note. Fletch went to the desk. The two envelopes were sealed. One said, Ms. Marilyn Mooney. The other, the authorities. The open note was to him. Fletcher, if I may ask you to do us one more favor, please deliver these notes as addressed. The letter to the authorities describes how and why I killed Stephen Peterman in such detail that they will have no choice but to believe me. My doctor will testify that I've been teetotal since I developed a heart problem more than 3 years ago, and I have provided the authorities with his name. The letter to Marilyn cannot explain all. Perhaps you can help her to understand. It says I have enjoyed spending these weeks with her, watching her, applauding her, loving her from behind the curtain, as it were. I am also telling her that I'm leaving her enough money so that she certainly should be able to pay off all these financial charges against her, however great, and maybe have enough left over for a quiet, non-working weekend sometime in her life. I'm reminded now of all the thousands of nights I've left some theater somewhere, tired to the bones, and walked alone to some hotel, only perchance to sleep, wondering as I walked why such talents, why such expertise, such energy is spent in creating an illusion for a handful of people for a few hours. What for? One can suspend reality, but never conquer it. Thanks for having me. Frederick Mooney. Chapter 40. The last chapter. In the quiet house, Fletch went back downstairs, along the corridor, through the billiard room, and into the small library at the back of the house. He sat at the desk. He called Chief of Detectives Roz Natchman's telephone number and left the message asking her to return the call immediately upon her arrival. He called Miami and inquired about the airplane he had chartered. It had already left. He asked the dispatcher to radio the pilot that now Fletch would need the airplane for a return flight to Fort Myers. Then, for the first time, Fletch remembered that days before he had abandoned a rented car at Fort Myers Airport. His luggage was still in the car. Then he called Washington, D.C. Now was the time to see if Global Cable News would listen to just any barefoot boy with cheek who happened to have a story. A woman answered, saying, Good afternoon, Global News. May I help you? Hello, Fletch said. My name is Armistead. This concludes the reading of Fletcher's Moxie by Gregory MacDonald. This book was read by Grover Gardner. Additional titles by Gregory MacDonald in the Books on Tape library include Fletch 1 and Carioca Fletch. For additional information about them or for help with topics of related interest, please call our customer service department or check our catalog index to find review material. Will you please wind or rewind the tape as appropriate so the book will be in order for the next person to enjoy? Thank you.